Welcome to the TaxCast, 15 minutes of eye-opening global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption services from the Tax Justice Network, with me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Is it the beginning of the end of aggressive tax avoidance by multinational corporations? This month, Google India was fined $13.8 million for violating accounting rules by the Indian Tax Office. France hit Google for $252 million in back taxes and penalties. Australia wants millions of dollars in back taxes from Apple. And in the UK Parliament, executives from Google, Amazon and Starbucks were grilled by members of Parliament about diverting hundreds of millions of UK profits to tax havens. And here's a sample of that encounter.
President of the International Division told investors, "We're very pleased with the performance in the UK, yet you filed £33 million losses."
"We've been encouraged by our ability to drive top-line sales and growth in this marketplace."
"But you're not making money."
"No,
well, you tell us you're not making money."
"No, and I assure you we're not making money. Our primary message has to be under the
You won't tell us where that 6% royalty goes. Surely it needs to be quantified if we're to have faith that it's not a way of fiddling money out of this country."
"No, I'm happy to tell you exactly where it goes. The full 6% goes to our regional headquarters in Amsterdam. That is where we have a roasting facility."
"How much of your Luxembourg business is sales into the UK?"
Fortunately, we've never broken out revenue figures on a country or website basis.
You can't be serious.
We operate a pan-European business. Those are the only figures we have ever broken out.
I used to be a finance director of a pan-European business, and if somebody asked me what do you sell in each country, I'd be fired immediately if I didn't have the answer to that question.
Those are numbers that we've never disclosed.
The UK Parliament earlier this month. Now we're going to talk to campaigning accountant Richard Murphy for his take on this month's events. So, Richard, we've had an incredible series of events in the tax justice world this month, haven't we? We've had banks that are too big to fail. Now we're seeing multinational companies that are too big to pay tax. It's all connected with how companies have been using different tax jurisdictions to shift their profits and costs.
Indeed. We know there are a lot of US companies appearing to abuse the UK tax system and the tax systems of many other European countries, where they are basically locating their transactions in one country and claiming they're exporting into the place where it appears they're trading. Now, that's the sort of situation with Google and Amazon. But Starbucks is a very physical presence, 700 Starbucks stores in the UK. And they've been here for 15 years and have only paid tax in one of those years. It's important for this reason. Google doesn't have a physical presence. In many ways, Amazon is the same. It's up to your conscience. Whether you use it or not is very much down to you and your computer in the quiet of your home. Everybody can walk into Starbucks and say, "I'd buy a coffee here except for the fact you don't pay tax." And this makes it a focus for protest, and I think it will be, because UK Uncut have said they are going to raise this issue by actually protesting in Starbucks stores. It seems to have been the catalyst for this increased interest in the whole subject of tax avoidance by multinational companies.
Right, so solving the problem then, we do need some collective international action to reform the way multinational companies are taxed, don't we? But that doesn't mean that individual governments are utterly helpless, does it?
Oh, there are quite a lot of things that individual countries can do here. Resources are key to this. In the UK, as I understand it, at present there are only 65 fully qualified transfer pricing specialists in the whole of our tax authority. Now, that is less than one for each member of the FTSE 100, let alone these other companies. But they can also do other things. Amazon claims that they trade from Luxembourg into France and that all the goods sold by Amazon in France are owned by the Luxembourg company, and therefore all the profits should be recorded in Luxembourg. And that's the same in the UK for their operation. Well, France has said we don't accept that logic. They've looked at it within the international laws. They're set by the OECD. All of these rules are subject to interpretation. I'm afraid too many of those interpretations come, as far as I can see, from large firms of accountants and lawyers. And what they need to do is say, no, we don't agree with these interpretations. We just think that if you have a physical presence here where you are clearly trading, where the goods never go near Luxembourg, where it appears that decisions are being made about a website which is actually described as amazon.co.uk or amazon.fr, then actually this is a local website managed locally, trading in this country, and we're going to tax you as if you are present. The UK, Germany, Spain, Italy, many other countries could do the same thing. If they all decided to do so, the international action would actually arise simultaneously. And every one of those governments, of course, is desperately short of tax revenue. And this might be an opportunity for them to take concerted action to say, no, we've fed up with this arrangement, this artificial abuse of structuring, and it's time now to actually collect the tax. There's one other thing that they can do as well, and that is to simply put into place something that we've discussed before on the TaxCast, and that is a genuine general anti-tax avoidance rule or principle. If we had one of those, we could look at this and say this whole structure is only and very obviously put in place to abuse the law, and therefore we can ignore it and tax the economic reality that's going on. The EU is suggesting that every member state should have such a general, widely drafted anti-avoidance rule inside its legislation to tackle just this very sort of thing. So the international momentum to demand change, both locally and by coordinated action, is growing.
And the Tax Justice Network itself is calling for a unitary tax, which would tax companies according to the genuine economic substance of what they do and where they do it. To me, that seems like it's a blindingly obvious good idea. Now, it's based on three things, I believe: physical assets of the company, their workforce, where they're actually based, who they're employing, and their sales and transfers. And the important point, I think, is that it's ignoring all the internal transfers of the type that you've just been talking about with companies like Starbucks.
Unitary taxation assumes that there is a group of companies, because there is. And it says it doesn't matter how many subsidiaries you put in place inside this group, all we're interested in is there's one group and countries in which it trades. And it identifies those countries, and it identifies them by where sales take place. That's the destination of the sales, not where they come from, because it would be terribly easy, of course, otherwise, for someone to make all their sales from the Cayman Islands, where there's no corporation tax. And we have to look at where employees are, and you can actually either count employees by literally their physical number or by the amount you pay them, and where the physical assets are, because it's incredibly easy, of course, to relocate what we call intangible assets. That's intellectual property and copyrights and patents and so on. And of course, those are all the things which give rise to much of the problem. So we take the group profits as a whole, and we say, where are your people? Where are your sales? Where are your assets? And split the group profit one third, one third, one third. The problem of the abuse of tax systems by multinational companies artificially reallocating profits has gone away. I think we are beginning to see another era in the history of tax justice campaigning opening, where we're beginning to talk about solutions rather than simply trying to create awareness of the problem. If we have people getting annoyed, if we have the press saying there's something wrong here, if pressure is put on politicians to react, and frankly, without that pressure, politicians won't react, then we are in the position that change becomes possible.
Thanks, Richard. Richard Murphy of Tax Research UK and author of The Courageous State. And now for the TaxCast special feature. If a country has a large financial sector, that must be good for its economy, mustn't it? Actually, too much of it can weaken the economy, slow growth, erode democracy, foster corruption, and increase inequality. The TaxCast looks at the latest Tax Justice Network research on the similarities between the resource curse and what they're calling the finance curse. In some resource-rich countries, despite the hundreds of billions of dollars generated, ordinary citizens can be worse off than if, for example, oil had never been discovered, or indeed, if they didn't have an oversized financial sector. Economist John Christensen.
An oversized finance sector, particularly an offshore financial sector, can dramatically change your economy. It'll crowd up pre-existing sectors. It'll make you politically dependent upon a single economic sector. There's a risk that your politics will be captured by the interests of that industry, making you politically captive to that industry. There's high risk of corruption flowing on from that. So in many respects, the finance curse acts in the same way as the resource curse in shaping your economic and political outcomes in very negative ways. So it doesn't just affect other countries negatively, it'll also affect the host country negatively.
Of course, no one's saying financial services aren't vital to the economy. We need banks. Businesses need banks, insurance and accounting services. So how big is too big? The Bank of International Settlements says finance turns bad when private credit's equivalent to 100% of a country's GDP, gross domestic product. In the United States, it was 200% at the time the financial crisis hit. But what about the benefits and contribution financial sectors make to the economy? Well, they're often exaggerated. Professor Prem Sekar on the City of London employment figures.
It is attracting a lot of concessions and support from the UK, but its economic base is very, very shaky. In 1991, around about 1 million people were directly employed in the financial sector. Here we are in 2012, and the number is 1,017,000. So there is no employment growth. So when the governments tell us that we must have support for the offshore tax haven, the hedge funds and private equity, the number of people directly employed in the finance sector is absolutely flat.
Not only that, but many of them have low-paid jobs in call centres and essential domestic retail banking services, which would exist whether or not they were based in London's financial sector. And job creation in casino banking, the cause of so many problems and so many claims about wealth generation, are much lower than that. Professor Sekar again.
What about the contribution of the City of London to the GDP? Well, it is around 6 to 8% of the GDP. And the manufacturing sector, even though it is shrunk, is still about 3 times as large in terms of the importance to the GDP, in terms of jobs, even more. So this curse kind of made policymakers, governments believe that finance is very important, but it has neither generated a GDP, neither generated the jobs. And what London has become is a home for hot cash. But that doesn't mean you have anything which is sustainable, anything which is durable.
Indeed, it's now clear that the speculative arms of oversized finance centres go hand in hand with economic crisis. We don't yet know what the final financial costs of bailouts we've paid for around the world will be, but it seems the largest finance sectors are now net consumers rather than contributors to tax revenue. The UK is now one of the most unequal societies in the developed world, and the OECD believes the City of London's financial sector has been a major factor. And there's another way a centre like the City of London damages growth in the real productive economy. John Christensen again.
It's been in the interests, for example, in the case of Britain, but for the City of London, they've always wanted to have extremely high exchange rates, real exchange rates and nominal exchange rates. And that's made it very difficult for productive industries in the rest of the economy to survive because they need lower exchange rates in order to compete on the world markets. Other pre-existing industries can't possibly compete on the world markets, so they are either diminished or totally wiped out. And they go from being exporting countries of other goods and materials and services to becoming importing economies, wiping out jobs, wiping out diversity within the economy, and becoming overly dependent upon the single sector.
So how's it working on the ground for a place like the island of Jersey, whose major offshore financial services sector accounts for over half of their GDP? I spoke to Jersey residents and tax justice campaigners John Hayes and Ted Vivett.
And how do you feel about this notion of the finance curse? Is that something you relate to?
Totally. Oh, absolutely. They're so right. That's exactly what it is.
We find what's happening in Jersey is immoral. And we've been fighting this in our own way for a long time now. The authorities in Jersey strongly deny that Jersey is a tax haven. They're in denial.
So if it is a tax haven, which they deny, then that's a great thing because it's attracting lots and lots of money from all over the world, which is great for the Jersey economy.
No. What happens with that money? It's usually transferred straight through to London. So we're a vessel for supplying money to London. Any company operating in Jersey that is not registered in Jersey, and there are a lot of them making a lot of money, pay zero tax. Anything associated with the finance industry, instead of paying the usual 20%, only pay 10%.
tax. Last year, the tax take from corporate was down to 18 million, from 108 to 18 million, and the tax take from people was up to 86 million. So the whole tax take in Jersey has changed completely, because we don't want to lose the finance industry. So one offshore jurisdiction says, well, we'll offer you a 5% tax rate. The next one says, no, we'll do it at 4%. And there's this race to the bottom. And we reached the bottom and we said, we're going to do it for zero.
So basically you're saying that ordinary people are paying a big price, literally, in their tax bills.
Yep. We're the ones who are paying for the development of the finance industry. And the take from the ordinary people will just go up and up and up.
And our tourism industry, which was one of our major industries, is down to about 2%, and our agriculture and industry is about 1%.
And so the finance sector's crowded out Jersey's tourism and agriculture industry dramatically, and it's now one of the developed world's most unequal places. John Christensen from the Tax Justice Network.
There needs to be a rebalancing of the global economy. The tendency towards speculative trading, towards investment banking activity, which has largely been casino activity, needs to be very much more effectively regulated. And I think that a financial transaction tax brought in at a reasonably high level and as global as possible would take away much of the incentive to engage in this socially useless speculative trading. And that would force the banks to focus more on what they should be doing, which is investing in long-term businesses and productive activity rather than in speculative trading.
For more information on how to solve tax avoidance, go to www.tackletaxhavens.com. You've been listening to The Taxcast. We'll have more news and analysis next month.